This is the Moonifest Destiny podcast. Moonifest Destiny is a novel I wrote back in 1991. Its subtitle is The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas. It's available on Kindle for 99 cents with illustrations. If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, you should go back and start with episode 1. I will read chapter 17. The glory gets going. We were all stunned, like blue jays flown into a window. Protectively, Kelly lay on top of me. A noble idea inspired by Walter Scott. However, it merely delayed my running down into the bomb-proof. Keep your head down, yelled Kelly. The long-promised glory begun its reign. While by now our baseball game was postponed on account of the rain of shells and round shot and such, cannonballs whizzed about bouncing and bursting all around, and our own big guns roared back with showers of sparks as the copper fuse sprang and stroked the coils along the length of the gun. When 18 pounds of powder in the annihilator cap flared, the shock of air pressure compressing the hot flicker in the muzzle of an unholy voltage, electrically igniting a blue ball of lightning, which the air pressure and electrically rifled vector sent careening outward. The number 2 battery gunners cheered, "Revenge!" Their ball of lightning knocked the bejesus out of a Fort Paredes cannon, sending fizzing pieces of it scattered across Plato's crater and burning tiny holes through all the lunar gutters. Gunners. Martha Mule hooted in her ditch as choking white clouds of steaming acid vapor rose up out of the sizzling batteries, buried to the wheel rims of their caissons, and rolled down the slope into the yard, obscuring the score chalked on the side of the three-wheeled chuck wagon. Calhounian Crawdads, 0. H. Clay Chickenhawks, 1. What should we do? I cried, looking to Kelly. Keep your head down, shouted Kelly, his face giving a little tick. What should we do? I repeated. How should I know? Leave me alone, answered Kelly, his eyes turning right to see a black spot swoosh over the fort. What should we do? I kept repeating. Haven't you done enough? You had to get your baseball, didn't you? Yelled Kelly. Sarah was running up the slope, skirts held high. Let's get him to the surgeon, she said, grabbing one of Weigart's legs. We didn't ask what for. With Sarah, Mallory, Tristan Ferruzzi, and I, we carried Weigart's corpse. Kelly followed, yelling at me. You had to ask for your baseball bag, didn't you? Oh, shut up. What? Shut up, Lieutenant. What? Kelly yelled. I was unfortunately unable to appreciate the full thrill of the glory that had finally begun, because I was too busy carrying the torn corpse of a friend. I am ashamed to admit that I was too appalled by the banal mask of the all-conquering worm worn by that jack-o'-lanternless scarecrow in my hands to reap that ripe good corn glory. What? Repeated Kelly angrily. Although the lunar cannonballs were shrieking around randomly overhead, or burying themselves in the earthworks of southern exposure. Behind us, they were not landing inside the yard as of yet. Therefore, I did not hesitate when we laid the corpse on the surgeon's table, set on the lee side of the bomb-proof mound, to shake my fist in my brother's face, to lay his wedding to rest. "Are we missing something?" asked the surgeon, following us outside. For just then, as the round shot kept falling, drums, whistles, and trumpets blew their familiar commands, but with unfamiliar allegro. The musics played Fall In on the Run. They passed the infirmary tent on the way to the bomb-proof. We ran into the yard. The sergeants bellowed, and the brave cotton balers fell in their neat rows. Once in our knee rows, the sergeants bellowed again, and the first row of men peeled off neatly into the company dugouts of the bombproof. All the while, round shot kicked dirt in the air on the walls of the fort, sometimes bounding over, sometimes rolling down, and plowing up showers of dust. Then came a different sound, a whistling, a sudden tea-kettle shriek from straight above, as if the clouds themselves were aboil. Then a mortar shell crashed straight down inside the six-sided heap of dust we called a fort. Right through the infirmary tent, it burst, a white dot, then red fire, and then black smoke, instantly with a heavy crackle. And blown upward, Sergeant Weigert's headless corpse flopped in the air, dancing a glory mocking jig, and flopped in a horrible, horrible heap. The terrified men broke the last rows of neat ranks and mobbed and fought to get into the bombproof, just as wispy drips drifted down gently, insubstantial ribboning. The red spark trail from the long-lit mortar fuse. Sarah whistled, standing by the wreckage. Tristani Ferruzzi, Kelly, and I ran back to poor Weigert. The old tired orderly, Reverend McKnight, whom we all trusted with our money when we went swimming in the Frigoris back in Annex Agonies, stopped us as we tried to drag the corpse back into the wreckage of the infirmary tent. "Don't bother the surgeon," he yelled over the booming, shrieking, and smashing. Dr. Payne searched among the wreckage for his instruments. We doughboys called him the Webster of the scalpel, so prolific and eloquent was his paring of gangrene limbs. Actually, we called him that to his front. We called him the Barbary Pirate to his back. Never know when your arm or leg might suffer his apothecary carpentry. He picked up a big hacksaw, blew off the dirt, and put it in his bag. Doing so, he accidentally stepped on the pint-sized bottle of that funny new opium called ether and broke it. "What? Oh, no loss, that perfume," he said. "Where's the Rupert's? Where's the leeches? Oh, my darlings, my poor little baby, save them." A music lad scrambled on his hands and knees trying to catch the squirming critters. We stared wide-eyed all around, like yesterday's drunks waking up today's swabbies. McKnight looked up at us and yelled, "Get out! Stick 'em in the dirt, you fools! You can have your ceremony later," he added, rushing past us to the bombproof with two big brown jugs of Rupert's Miracle Salve and tonic. Kneeling right there beside the bombproof entrance, with our hands we scratched a shallow ditch for the poor gunner. Something about it seemed all wrong to me. Seemed to me some congressman or general ought to say a lot of stuff about peace, God, and glory. And there should be some pretty awful, awfully pretty women crying and sniffling and needing comforting. However, I was the one sniffling. Sarah was telling me to quit whining. And the only speech Kelly gave was this: "Where's his head? His head, his head. We can't bury him without his head." In all the excitement, we hadn't found that part. Kelly shook me. "Where is it?" "I don't know," I yelled. "It must have rolled off somewhere." We glanced all around. Just then, a round shot hit the sand 10 yards shy of us and bounded by. "Looks like the Trankies found their range," said Sarah calmly. The major's aide, Lieutenant Fredrickson, jumped out of a black cloud and growled, "Everyone, get in the bombproof, fast, fast." He disappeared into a white cloud. "Let's just bury him as he is," said Sarah. "And if the head turns up, aw, heck." She pushed big heaps of sand over the body with her heels. "It's just one less skull for the devil to play marbles with." She grabbed a water bucket and ran to gun battery 2. That's how I learned the second duty of the shovel-wielding angry Saxon army, to bury their dead. You can call me a Whig if you must, but for me it was an inauspicious introduction to the religion of glory that first day of siege. Kelly took note of that, and in big brotherly fashion, once we were safe inside the gloom of the bombproof, took it upon his dandified epithets to explain to all his crawdads the principles of progress as bombs burst all around and the corpse's head was never found until too late. Thank you for listening. So, Weigert was a real soldier, and he did get decapitated in the initial barrage in the Mexican War, the siege of Fort Texas, later renamed Fort Brown and became Brownsville, Texas. And also another detail that's true is the return fire hit a Mexican cannon. But I mention these details not just as examples of my research, but also to mention that the unpleasant bit in the story about the shell hitting the corpse of Weigert and knocking it up in the air, that really happened. So this is my first novel, and I made the decision to be loyal to the truth and include it. Moonfest Destiny is available on Kindle for 99 cents. Thank you.